Hi, welcome back. I'm Simi Lerner, and this is the Judaism From Within podcast. The podcast where we develop the perspective and the approach of Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch. We've been going through the work Chorev, through the different commandments, the work where Rav Hirsch describes and discusses the reasoning, the rationale behind the commandments in the Torah, the commandments behind God's law, what are the reasons for them, and in aid of connecting us and involving more of ourselves in the commandment, not it simply being one of rote or even obedience, but adding more of ourselves to the commandment. But this is a perfect opportunity to really develop once again where we're going with this. What is the purpose of what we're doing? What is the ultimate foundation of why we do the commandments? And this is a great opportunity to really touch in on those more foundational questions. And Rav Hirsch does it here when it comes to forbidden food. But before we go on, a bit of an introduction or a bit of a step back. First of all, I want to apologize for the lack of content over the past couple of months. Thank God teaching has been quite full. I've got multiple organizations that I'm very grateful to be able to teach at, but the different topics and the amount of time has been quite overwhelming, in a good way, but hasn't really left time for more personal projects. But I hope now things are more settled and more structured that I can continue engaging in this podcast. That's the first thing. The second thing is, let's step back from a conceptual standpoint. What are we doing here? We're talking about reasons for the commandments. What does Rav Hirsch give us? He gives us six categories of Jewish law, and they fit into one of three principles. Principles that Rav Hirsch understands to be the center and the focal point of a Jew's purpose in this world. Love, justice, or the education towards love and justice. And that would require a series on the 19 letters to really unpack. But if we take that as a given, that that is the goal of a Jew in this world, to either express love, or to express justice, or educate towards those two principles to themselves or the world, that is the goal of a Jew. Okay, if that's the goal of a Jew, then every commandment would fit in some way, shape, or form into that framework. Okay, what are the frameworks? We have Tyros and Eidos. Philosophical principles that are lived out in action, and Eidos, symbolic ideas that draw back truths into our experience. Those two are educational. Then you have Mishpatim and Chukim. Mishpatim are laws and principles of justice. We know I'm a human, you're a human, I know I should act you in a certain way. I don't need the Torah to tell me this, because I know what it means to be a human. The Torah tells me and legislates these things, but I understand why this represents justice. And then we have Chukim. Afterwards, we have mitzvahs, which are principles of love, and avodah, which is once again back to the educational component. But back to chukim. Rav Hirsch looks at chukim as being also expressions of justice, but without certain premises. What do I mean by that? When it comes to my relationship with another person, I can extrapolate what it means to be me to what it means to be them to how I should act towards them. Things I know I don't want done to myself, I shouldn't do to other people. When it comes to chukim, Rav Hirsch tells us it's exactly the same, but I just don't have the variables. I don't know what it means to be the environment. How should I relate to the environment? What, taking into account that I have a goal and a purpose in this world, how should I best engage with the environment? How should I best engage with my soul? I don't know the relationship between my body and my soul. How should I relate to what I look at? These aren't principles of justice in the classical sense of the word, but they are principles of justice because Rav Hirsch has a very basic assumption that if I would have access to all these principles, the nature of my soul, the true nature of the environment, the animal kingdom, things that I don't connect to, but let's say I could, hypothetically, really truly understand their nature, then the chukim would make complete sense, like the mishpatim do. And off the basis of that, Rav Hirsch develops possible reasons for the chukim in relationship to what it means to be a Jew and the goal of the Jew in this world. But there's one important point. We've got that first assumption to begin with. That first assumption is that you are a being in this world with a mission. Your body is a tool of service of your soul. You have a role to play in this world in relationship to the highest ideal, in relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has given you a mission and a purpose in this world, and there is some ultimate noble goal that you are pursuing. If you don't have that assumption, it doesn't matter what reasons you give, it will always sound very vapid and very empty even if it can have a cool symbolic edge to it. I'll explain what I mean, and why this comes up specifically when it comes to forbidden foods. When it comes to forbidden food, we kind of assume we know the topic. And Rav Hirsch opens up like this. People say, "What would God care what I put in my mouth?" It's a classic atheist line. Does God really care who you're intimate with? Does God really care what you eat? Things that we engage with as a human being in a very regular way. We kind of think we get it. So when I tell you not to eat a pig, you're like, really? Why not? Why would God care? And here's an interesting paradox that sort of, or something counterintuitive that emerges from this. The more bizarre the commandment, the more likely people are kind of going to accept the reason. And I'll explain what I mean by that. If I tell a person the reason why we dash the blood of a particular animal above the Mizbeach, over below the Mizbeach, and I give, I don't know, some symbolic reason, as long as the symbolic reason sounds compelling, people are kind of okay to accept it, and can even laud it and cheer it, like, wow, that's so deep. In a similar way, if I give a Kabbalistic explanation for something, I don't. But let's say I did. A Kabbalistic explanation, a way that refers to a certain school of Jewish mysticism, a particular way of understanding the tree of life, a particular way of understanding the dynamics between different energies and the flow of energies and the relationship between certain lower forces, and I give a beautiful symbolic explanation around it, people are susceptible to just accept it, because they're not coming at it assuming they understand the basic principles. They don't understand the moving parts, in which case, it just sounds quite magical. That works on the symbolic level, but it also works on the more mystical level. The more distant it is from your experience, the more likely you are to sort of like say, fair enough, okay. But when it comes to things that are very close to your experience, things that you engage with on a daily life, we kind of assume we know what we're talking about. And Rav Hirsch uses this opportunity to say that, well, if you go with his assumption that you are a individual, a human called on a mission by a divine source, you don't know the moving parts, and you don't know the relationship between the things you eat and your mission, which means he's not arguing with the reason to why you should accept the commandment. He's saying, if you come in with a certain group of assumptions, the reason I will give will sit nicely within that framework. To perhaps break it down, the purpose of a Jew in this world, according to the Torah from Rav Hirsch's standpoint, is to fulfill his mission in relationship to these principles of love, justice, and the education towards love and justice. How do you do this? Well, you do this by recognizing that you're not a plant. A plant does what it does because it's created to do as it does. A human being is supposed to transcend that and act in freedom in the world. Anything that leans you towards the deterministic nature of the world that we live in is moving you away from your mission. Rav Hirsch looks at this as being the distinction between purity and impurity. For Rav Hirsch, tumah. For other people, it is a dirty word. For him, it just means you're engaging in something that will move you away from embracing your mission as a human being, embracing your free will as being the focal point of your life. And this plays itself out, be it in contact with dead, birth, and a number of other things, but also in terms of what you eat. Certain things dull or overemphasize different aspects of the human condition, which will move you away from your mission. So if we now take open or break open the six areas, well, five for our conversation, where kashrus plays a part, we'll see that each one of these, you have the ability to lean into the animal side. And once again, when I say the animal side, I don't mean acting in an animalistic way. I mean connecting too deeply to the natural framework of the causal chain of the natural world. God created the world, but the world follows God's will by its simple existence. We get to choose. And if we don't have that at the forefront of our mind, that our choice is central, we kind of seep into a more neutral state where we kind of flow with our natural environment. And that isn't the goal or the mission of a Jew. So if we're talking about what animals we eat, what category of animal is permitted and what is not permitted, how does that symbolism relate to, once again, my mission and the importance of having my mind at the forefront of my experience? choosing, being that arbiter between decisions, not letting my natural environment just pull me in one direction or another. What parts of the animal I can eat and what I can't I eat? What combinations or compounds of food are problematic, even within the permitted? The method of slaughter itself. You're about to consume the flesh of another animal, something that animals do. What do you do first? How does shchita, the actual ritual slaughter that we engage with, how does that bring out the individual conscious being? And how does it push that to the forefront of your mind? This will come into play next week when we break down the different categories of kashrus. But we're going to discuss shchita, we're going to discuss milk and meat, we're going to discuss blood, and we're going to discuss the different types of animals. That's the goal for next week. So just a summary. We spoke about, once again, what are we doing in this project? We're trying to understand the laws and their reasons, but only with the base assumption that you're here for a purpose. That is already a religious assumption. And what I mean by already you have a religious assumption, this also protects from the classical response that people often complain they get, is that once you explain a symbolic interpretation for one of the laws in the Torah, people say, well, couldn't you come about it a different way? Couldn't you interpret it in this way? Well, it depends on your approach. Do you think that you have the base assumption, the religious assumption of you are obligated in this mission, and then you have the commandment on top by the divine saying this is the ideal way of engaging in this mission? At which point, your goal is to connect the reason to the mission. How does the reason, which is speculative, we're coming up with a reason, Rav Hirsch is developing a reason based off his understanding of what the mission is. Then when he sees aspect of the reason fall in line with the mission, he makes the connection. This is so key, because the mission came first. And the commandment comes afterwards in relationship to the mission. Even if we don't have an explicit interpretation why this action feeds the mission, we can speculate, but only if it falls in line with the pursuit of the mission. So if a person can give an interpretation of Basar V'Chalav that seems to stand counter to the classical ideas within Judaism, that's not clever. That's just an expression in a person's creativity. But if they're able to engage that creativity in relationship to the mission of the Torah, that's a tam. That's a reason for the commandment. I hope this was clear. Next week we will dive straight into the actual interpretation of the commandment of forbidden foods. Thanks for your time, as always.